Hello and welcome to another episode of Banking on Information. Today, my guest is Brian McAvoy, who is Chief Retail Banking Officer at Webster 5. Welcome to the podcast, Brian.
Thank you, Rucker. Thank you for having me.
Well, we'll dive right in with that very first question. Why, Brian, do you do what you do?
I love this question, and I've watched a number of your episodes, and the variety of answers is amazing. So let me give you kind of two parts. Why do I do what I do? Like, first, the company Webster 5, right? Why do we do what we do? We operate as a mutual bank, which a lot of people don't know what that is. It's a bank, but we don't have shareholders or stockholders or any special interests. We are owned by our depositors. And so everything we do is for the benefit of the communities we serve. And our actual mission statement, so why we do what we do, is to amplify the good in our communities. It all comes back to how do we benefit the community. So that's our reason why we do what we do. Why I do what I do, Rucker, and why I joined Webster 5 in 2020 is because that type of mission really aligns with, my own personal values. And I was looking for a way to connect the work I do in banking with something, a bit more meaningful and, directly tied to helping people. And so it was a perfect fit.
So you are a person who wants to benefit the community, and this seemed like a perfect match with Webster 5. Now, what is the main thing that you solve for the customers of Webster 5? What would you say you do for them?
Banks primarily are, providing advice and, guidance and money management to customers. As you know, and, as you discussed on this podcast with a number of different people, the products and services have largely become commoditized. And then the delivery mechanism has shifted more and more towards self-service and digital tools, right? So we recognize that, and we want to provide, a service delivery model that gives you the best of the self-service tools and 24/7 access and, best digital products around, but really in a manner that is truly relationship management tied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, we have a close relationship with our customers, whether that's our commercial bankers with their customers or our branch team members with people who come and visit the branch, or if you want to call, this is increasingly rare, I think, in banking, you want to call the bank and talk to somebody. We have a contact center where you would get to know the, five or six people that work in there on a first name basis. The way that we do things is we tie the best of the technology that's available out there with a true personalized experience in our, assisted channels.
That is a very community focused and absolutely something that people are looking for, to have the best of the digital tools available, but also have someone to actually speak to, a real human in the loop, I think is still very important for a lot of people. Now, when that happens successfully, how do your customers talk about that?
I've got a real life use case, actually. My son, who's 21 years old, was recently looking to change banks. He didn't bank with us yet. Bad parenting on my part, right? So he had a pre-existing relationship, and he had some service issues, we'll just say, with that institution. And so he asked him, should I come to your bank and why? And I said, yes, and here's why. And I gave him the reason I just told you. And I offered him, as a Gen Z potential customer, multiple ways to interact with the bank. So you can open your account online. We have a digital solution for account opening. Or you can come into a branch. And he said, well, I think I want to come into a branch, which surprised me. He's like, which one should I go to? And I gave him choices, and he went to one down the street from us. And what he said, which really resonated with me, because I think it's the most important thing and probably the failure point for the most part with these kind of advice-led conversations in branches across the industry, is the rep that he met with answered all of his questions and explained how things work to him. It was more than just a, let's fill out the paperwork, let's get you set up and out the door transaction, and more of a, he came in, he's got questions, he doesn't really understand how banking works, and the representative sat down with him and took the time to guide him and provide him direction on, you know, how to make the most out of the services. And I would say that our customers, by and large, would tell you that's what happens in a Web 5 branch or, you know, the call center. In our community, we've been voted the best bank in the area, 5 out of the last 7 years. We have really unheard of NPS scores in the high 80s, low 90s. So I think our customers really understand the value we deliver, and they champion it and really, through word of mouth, help us reach more of their friends and family.
That is a very powerful story, especially given that it's your son, right? It's so close, but then you learn from that and you actually get that feedback and almost see through his eyes. And it's great to hear that he had such a great experience and really felt heard and helped. So, hey, this, let me explain how this works. Let's not just tick boxes and get you on your way. That is a very powerful way to get people to really experience what you do and set you apart, I think, from a lot of organizations.
I made an assumption that because he's 21, his preference would be to do it by himself. I was dead wrong about that. And I think it helps dispel a lot of the myths about generational banking. Right. And the research is starting to show this. Gen Z, which is the group that everybody's trying to go and acquire as customers, because we want to build the next generation of customers. This example with my son, but also there's countless other examples like that, show that they're really looking for a full service banking model. Yeah, they want to use online and mobile banking. And sure, they might want to deposit cash at an ATM instead of a branch, but they're still coming in and they have questions. They need to be reassured that they need confidence with the choices that they're making. And that's, I think, where good bankers always make a difference. Like, that's where the difference happens.
And it all comes down to trust. Who can I trust? Who's there for me when I need them? It also doesn't have to be all the time. I don't think your son is eager to be at the branch for every transaction. I think he'd probably be very happy to do a lot of stuff online, but the moments that count, it is important that someone is there for you and can actually explain things and sort things out for you. Now, I like to do this thing called futures thinking. We don't know what the future is going to bring us, not even tomorrow, but we can think of a possible future. So let's think 10 years out, 2035. Paint me a picture of what you think banking, community banking, what the world could look like. What is a possible future that you see?
I think about this one a lot, Rucker. You know, kudos to you with this podcast, with the format. Like, I know what questions are coming and I've watched a number of your episodes, but the answers have been fascinating, right? This is the hardest question, I think, for anyone to answer, because the future is like forever getting closer. 10 years out, 10 years ago was a lot farther away than it is now. 10 years, 50 years ago was even farther away. So, you know, I feel like the equivalent of 10 years out now is like, what does next year look like? And so it's really, really difficult, but I do have some thoughts in terms of the industry. One, I think there's a David and Goliath story that's going to play out. So in the US in particular, I think bank consolidation has been lagging the rest of the world. And we have a lot of banks and a lot of credit unions. And sure, there's been some rationalization of that over the past, you know, 20 years or whatever. But I think there's going to be a lot more, especially if the regulatory environment remains friendly to M&A. And I think that actually creates an opportunity for mission-based community financial institutions, because there's always going to be a place for a Webster 5 where, you know, customers feel like they need to have a personal connection, and they can go into a branch, they can talk to somebody, they can get somebody on the phone, they can do all those things. There's always going to be a place for the money centers and the convenience of, I have a bank, you know, here, I can move across the country and go to Florida, whatever, and not have to change banks. Like, I think that's a very real thing. It's the part in the middle that I think is, you know, really, really challenged. Like, how do you operate as a, you know, 40 or a $60 billion bank. I don't think you do in 10 years, right? I think it's, you know, really locally led community financial institutions and then large banks and really nothing in between. I think what's going to drive a lot of that too, and, you know, the thing that everybody should be thinking about, and I say this at the risk of it, you know, sounding cliche because everybody talks about AI and everybody talks about blockchain, but the reality is, I think anybody in my position or a position like it, or, you know, business line leader in commercial or, you know, investment banking or whatever, should really, really have a deep understanding, not just of generative AI, but agentic and, you know, any other type of artificial intelligence that's coming down the road, because it's going to change workflows. It's going to change, you know, customer expectations. I also think it's going to drive, ironically, maybe the need for more human connection. One, because it's becoming increasingly difficult to see and really distinguish between what's real and what's artificially generated. And so people are going to want to connect in person and, you know, have real human interactions. Two, I think the efficiency of it and the automation of, you know, rote tasks and really being able to deliver a lot of that in a more secure manner through blockchain is really going to change the entire, you know, I guess, guts of the industry. And we really need to be prepared for that. I don't know what that's going to look like end state, but I believe that those are the two components that are going to drive the bulk of that change.
Definitely. AI is here and here to stay. It's going to change everything. Blockchain, same thing. For a while, some people were thinking, oh, maybe this is a fad. It'll go away. Maybe it's just a phase. But no, those are two things that are going to be real. And especially also what you're talking about, the consolidation and kind of the bookends, right? So either you're very focused on one specific community or you have lots of scale, but that kind of stuck in the middle, is that's going to be hard 10 years from now. So I really, really agree about everything that you're saying. Now, if that becomes the reality, what can we do today to get ready for that?
You know, I think it's it's really about education. So you kind of talked about a little bit earlier, the speed of technology transformation. It's becoming more and more rapid. So it's more and more difficult to stay current on that, but it's also more and more important to stay current. Like, we didn't understand what the risks and the opportunities that these technological innovations provide to our industry. And I think there's going to be winners and losers. What can we do now? It's trying to answer the questions like you asked, you know, futurist thinking, you know, what do we think it looks like? How do you prepare yourselves for that? How do you educate yourselves on, you know, the emerging capabilities and, you know, what the potential implications are on your business?
It's always a good answer to stay informed and educate yourself about things that are coming, but especially here, you can no longer deny that this is happening. So yes, inform yourself, learn about it, do things like futures thinking, right? Think about what possible futures could be. No one can predict the future, but thinking about the future helps you train that muscle and even see things that you might otherwise not have seen. That's probably also a good point to wrap this up on. Thank you very much, Brian, for doing the futures thinking and for sharing your why and why Webster 5 does what it does.
Thanks for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it.
And until next time, choose to be curious.